Sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network, and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and the editorial review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on journalistic fraud, how the New York Times distorts the news, and why it can no longer be trusted. Now, over the past few evenings, we've been going over a phenomenal book, Journalistic Fraud, by Bob Cohn. You can get a copy. I recommend it. It's $27.95 from Barnes & Noble. I recommend it because it's a 1 in 20 book. We've all been suspicious. We've all heard the story about how the media, the news media, CBS, NBC, The Times, The Washington Post, are controlled, the controlled mainstream media, where we can't get the truth, we can't get the facts. And we've looked at the lies that have been perpetrated upon us by the Times and by the mainstream media. Spin is the politically correct way to lie. And here, Bob Cohn has shown us with specificity how the Times, and not just the Times, but the mainstream media, uses push polls and crusades. And they flood the zone, and they quote someone who agrees with us, and they use straight news articles to propagandize us with their political opinion. Does it work? They use omission, distortion, falsification, and emphasis. Does it work? Quoting someone who agrees with you and directly injecting your opinion and omitting the opposing opinion and faking fairness and balance. But does it work? And the answer is, you bet it does. You bet it does. The opinion of Americans is controlled by the mainstream media. Now, in the upcoming election in 2004, there are two candidates for president. Both of them came from Yale. Both of them belong to a fraternity called Skull and Bones. Skull and Bones is a think tank. It's a policy-making institution. And you're going to vote for Bonesman Kerry or Bonesman Bush, but you're not going to vote for the white life pill. You can have the red death pill or the green death pill, but the white life pill is not available. None of the major media, that is the television, radio, newspapers, and magazines, are going to offer you an alternative to the Republicans or the Democrats. And that's the point. The New York Times is not pushing the Democrats over the Republicans or the Republicans over the Democrats. They're pushing their agenda for the New World Order, which both the Republicans and the Democrats have signed onto. The objective of the New York Times is not to get you to vote Republican or to get you to vote Democratic. It's to keep you from voting anything other than Republican or Democratic. That's the secret. The purpose for the push-pull polls, the crusades, the flooding the zone, quoting someone who agrees with you in straight news articles, distorted interpretation, news analysis. The mainstream media has an objective, and that's to keep you on the straight and narrow. We don't care if you vote Republican or Democratic. What we're concerned about is that you people might wake up and vote for something other than Republican or Democratic. That is intolerable. That cannot be accepted. Now, I reported falsely here that Bob Cohn was a former reporter with the New York Times. After reading the captions, I find that Bob Cohn is a lot of things, but he's not and never has been a reporter for the New York Times. That was a mistake on my part. I read into the story here more than was there. Bob Cohn is an attorney and seasoned executive with experience in both the entertainment and high-tech industries. He's a prize-winning essayist. Cohn co-authored the legal treatise Cohn on Music Licensing, which USA Today called the Bible of Legal Issues in the Music World. Cohn was founder of eMusic.com Incorporated and served as associate editor of the Entertainment Law Reporter. Currently, he's vice chairman of the board of Borland Software Corporation. Bob Cohn has had enough. Over the years, he has seen his favorite newspaper become increasingly corrupted by its flagrantly liberal management. In Journalistic Fraud, Cohn proves that the Times can no longer be trusted. And with precision and penetrating insight, he shows explicitly how the once-vaunted paper now specializes in gross misinformation, slanting the presentation of the facts and leads, headlines and placement, utilizing polls, labels, and loaded language to hoodwink readers, staffing the newsroom with hacks who manipulate the news to further a leftist agenda. And this is not intricate media criticism or even angry political rhetoric. This is a simple, straightforward, thoroughly studied critique from a lifelong reader of the Times, a loyal subscriber who wants wants to see the paper return to its original position as a model of journalistic integrity, not journalistic fraud. By revealing the Times' varied methods of manipulation, Cohn also gives you the expertise to be able to decipher the distortions for yourself, a game that can be more fun and much easier than the New York Times crossword puzzle. The Times has changed, but sadly not for the better. And this book sets the newspaper of record straight. Now, I'm going to deviate a little now. We've taken a look at four or five chapters here in the book. You can buy the book and read it for yourself. You don't need a reading lesson. But the upshot of the entire exercise is, why do they want to do that? Why does the New York Times, the Washington Post, or the Philadelphia Inquirer want to deceive you? What's the end game plan? What's the purpose? I mean, I could come on the air and lie to you. What would be the purpose? If I'm going to do that, I've got to have a goal. It's got to be, I want to sell you something. I want you to buy something from me. I'm going to make money off of it. I'm going to gain power. I'm going to do something to better myself by lying to you. A salesman lies to you because he wants to sell you his product, so he makes his commission. That's natural. That's logical. What is it that the New York Times is selling? What is it that they want to lie to you about? What's the purpose behind it? Well, there's two, and I'm going to show you both, one secular and one from the scripture. The first comes from the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, published in 1884, republished in 1907, then republished by Henry Ford in 1922. The Protocols of the Learned Elders is a blueprint for the New World Order. It's a blueprint for the United Nations and the takeover of the entire world to create a one world government, a new world order. And the New York Times has a part in that overall game plan. The first protocol tells us that our triumph has been rendered easier by the fact that in our relations with the men with whom we wanted to have always worked upon the most sensitive chords of the human mind, upon the cash account, upon the cupidity, upon the insatiability for material needs of man. And each one of these human weaknesses taken alone is sufficient to paralyze initiative, for it hands over the will of men to the disposition of him who has bought their activities. That's why bribery is so important in our political process. That's why we have Kissinger and associates to lobby on Capitol Hill. It's to buy the votes of the lawmakers. It's to pervert the political process. It's to destroy the United States of America, and indeed every nation in the world, and subject it to the New World Order. And it's for this reason that we must undermine faith and eradicate from the minds of the Gentiles the very principles of God and soul, and replace these conceptions by mathematical calculations and material desires. That's why we have evolutionary philosophy that has taken the place of God and morality. Evolution is a very important part. It's the philosophical base by which the New World Order seeks to take over the world. We have to eliminate God, kick him out of our schools, kick him out of our consciousness, kick him out of our public institutions, so that we can replace it with the New World Order. The administrators chosen by us from the masses for their servility will not be persons trained for government, and consequently they will easily become pawns in our game, played by our learned and talented counselors, specialists educated from early childhood to administer world affairs. As we know, our specialists have been acquiring the necessary knowledge for governing. The people in America who hold public office are not trained for public office or governmental service. But those in the think tanks, those in the Committee of 300, the Bilderbergers, the CFR, the Trilateral Commission are. Those are the people who guide and direct American politics, and indeed, they guide and direct British, French, German, Chinese, Russian. They direct the politics and the political process around the world through the United Nations, and they're in the process of creating a new world order, a one-world super-government. Now, when we become rulers, we shall regard as undesirable the existence of any religion except our own, proclaiming one God with whom our fate is tied as the chosen people, and by whom our fate has been made one with the fate of the world. And for this reason, we must destroy all other religions. If thereby should emerge contemporary atheists, then as a transition step, this will not interfere with our aims. So the godless, the anti-religion diatribe that you see going on in the news media and in our public affairs is not an accident. It's designed that way. And in the final analysis, when it's all said and done, there will be one religion left on planet Earth, and everyone will subscribe to it or die. That's how simple that is. A world coalition of Gentiles could cope with us temporarily, but we're assured against this by roots of dissension among them so deep that they cannot be torn out. We have created antagonism between the personal and the national interests of the Gentiles by arousing religious and race hatreds, which we have nourished in their hearts for 20 centuries. So the propaganda that you see coming out of the Times and the major news media is aimed at control and the destruction of all competing religions and political ideologies worldwide. What's coming out of the New York Times and the modern media is not an accident. It's carefully designed, carefully orchestrated. And they go on to tell us that we will so wear out and exhaust the Gentiles by all of this that they will be compelled to offer us an international authority, which by its position will enable us to absorb without disturbance all of the governmental forces of the world, and thus form a super government. We must so direct the education of Gentile society that its hands will drop in the weakness of discouragement in the face of any undertaking where initiative is needed. This is why we're propagandized and guided so effectively by the news media. We believe in evolution because we read it in the Sunday supplement. We believe in our political process and our educational process, our 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, which cause us to practice public education. Free education for all children in public schools, the central bank, the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto, the second plank, the income tax. These are concepts and principles of government and philosophy, of economics, that our founding fathers did not give us in our Constitution and Bill of Rights, but which have been foisted off upon us by the news media, by those who are skilled in world affairs, trained counselors who are trained in government. All right, you're listening to the Law Hour and the Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, Charles Lyell, one of the pillars of modern geology, published his Principles of Geology in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe them don't even know who it was that originated those ideas. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins has been devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. And that way, catastrophes like Noah's flood are strictly ruled out, and this process is called science. Now listen to this. The sun is shrinking. A Newswire report of March 23, 1980 made this surprising statement. It says, quote, the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. Scientists have been watching for over 100 years now, and the evidence is conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then it totals 1% per millennium. And if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present size. And only 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. Now, what did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? Do you remember that in high school? Wasn't that 65 million years ago that the dinosaurs died out? And if we follow this line of evolutionary reasoning, 20 million years ago, the sun was 93 million miles in diameter, touching the orbit of the Earth. Now, you know, boys and girls, we don't have to be rocket scientists to do the math on this kind of pseudo-scientific lie, but this is the kind of philosophical concept that is being propagandized to us through the New York Times and through the major news media. And this is just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the guise of science. And this is one of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School that I conduct twice a year here in Isabella, Missouri, and have also on compact disc for home education. For more information, why don't you order my free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. So why don't you call right now the number 417-273-4967 and order yours. If you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, I'm reviewing a book here called Journalistic Fraud, How the New York Times Distorts the News and Why It Can No Longer Be Trusted. It's written by Bob Cohn. You can get a copy from wndbooks.com. That's wndbooks.com. I got mine from Barnes & Noble, $27.95. I rated about a 1 in 20 read. You'll have to read another 20 books before you'll find one like this one. Right now, I'm covering the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. Not all of them, but, you know, about 10 or 15 of them here, just to give you a little sampling of what it is that we're looking at here in the major news media and why the purpose, or what is the purpose, for the New York Times and the major media in trying to deceive us. Why do they want to do that, and what's the net result of it? What are they going to get out of it? Who cares? You know, when somebody says to me that they have a particular belief, I don't care. It doesn't affect me one way or the other. I don't get apoplectic and throw a fit because somebody believes the world is round or flat, or that they're going to go to heaven or hell, or that I'm going to miss out on going to heaven or hell if I don't believe thus and such or so. And so it's not really important to me, and I'm not out evangelizing. But for some reason, the news media is doing just that, and it's important to them that they sell to you and you believe in evolutionary philosophy. It's important to them that you vote Republican or Democratic. It's important to them that you get out and vote and register and participate in the political process. And so my question is, well, who cares? Why is it important? Well, it's very important, as we'll see. When we talk about the press, one of the protocols, it's the 12th protocol, says, we shall handle the press in the following manner. We shall saddle it and keep tight rein upon it. And boy, have they. We shall do the same also with other printed matter. For of what use is it to rid ourselves of attacks in the press if we remain exposed to criticism through pamphlets and books? And second, not one announcement will reach the people save under our supervision. We have attained this at the present time to the extent that all news is received through several agencies in which it is centralized from all parts of the world. So the news that we receive comes to us through Reuters, AP, or UP. It's centralized. And then it goes out on the New York Times wire service to other newspapers, magazines, and the news media. And then they're the pollsters. It's the New York Times CBS polling service. You see how they control what you read, what facts you receive? You know, your opinions are made up based upon the facts that you receive into your mind, and the only facts that you can receive into your mind are those facts that are first filtered through the New York Times and the major news media. You don't get to see the other side of the coin. You get to see what your masters want you to see. You get to hear what your masters want you to hear. You get to know what your masters want you to know. Like a slave on a plantation in 1830. We don't want education in here. We don't want these people to know or understand law, philosophy, science, politics. We want these people to know and understand how to grow cotton, or how to cut weeds, and how to run a cotton gin, or how to make things work here on the plantation. But we don't want these people to learn things that might advance their knowledge, their understanding, and perhaps free them from this kind of bondage. You know, there's nothing happier or better than a slave who believes he's free. The number three, literature and journalism, they tell us, are the two most important educational forces, and consequently our government will become the owner of most of the journals. And if we permit 10 private journals like George Gordon or Truth Radio, we shall organize 30 of our own, and so on. Listen, these people own and run Dateline, 60 Minutes, the Lair News Hour, the New York Times. There's an underground press that still operates here in America, but that underground press reaches thousands. The mainstream media reaches millions. It's not a few thousand of us that are going to vote George Bush or John Kerry out of office. It is the millions who read the New York Times and subscribe to Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw that are going to vote in Kerry or Bush to Bonesman. We're going to have a choice between Bonesman A and Bonesman B, but we're going to have a Bonesman for president. That's the bottom line. Now, this must not be suspected by the public, for which reason all of the journals published by us will be externally of the most contrary opinions and tendencies, thus evoking confidence in them and attracting our unsuspecting opponents, who thus will be caught in our trap and rendered harmless. And then to prevent them from really thinking about anything themselves, we shall deflect their attention to amusements and games and pastimes, excitements and people's palaces, like the Super Bowl and the World Series. Such interests will distract their minds completely from questions on which we might be obliged to struggle with them. Becoming less and less accustomed to independent thinking, people will express themselves in unison, and express themselves in unison with us, because we alone offer new lines of thought. Of course, through persons whom they do not consider in any way connected with us. You know, nice people like Tom Brokaw and Jim Lehrer. People of all opinions in the 10th Protocol, and of all doctrines, are at our service. Restorers of monarchy, demagogues, socialists, communists, and other utopians, we've put them all to work. Every one of them, from his point of view, is undermining the last remnant of authority, is trying to overthrow all existing order. All of the governments have been tormented by these actions, but we will not give them peace until they recognize our super government. Take a look at the greenies and the environmental movement. Take a look at trade, commerce, business, and industry, and the Republicans and the Democrats, and everybody fighting among themselves to advance their political agenda. It torments the government, runs up the costs of management and government. And when we introduce the poison of liberalism into the governmental organism, its entire political complexion changed. Liberalism, introduced into our governmental apparatus, has destroyed our republic and is in the process of destroying our economy, and shortly will destroy our nation. In this divergence between the Gentiles and ourselves, an ability to think and reason is to be seen clearly. The seal of our election as the chosen people, and as higher human beings in contrast with the Gentiles, who have merely instinctive and animal minds. They observe, but they do not foresee, and they invent nothing except perhaps material things. It is clear from this that nature herself predestined us to rule and guide the world. That's the 14th protocol. That's the essence of evolutionary philosophy. And notice here, nature herself, God, is a female. Now, to each act of opposition, we must be in a position to respond by bringing on war through the neighbors of any country that dares to oppose us. And if these neighbors should plan to stand collectively against us, we must let loose a world war. They've done that twice, and if the Arabs should ever wake up, we will unleash a world war against the Arabs. In the 9th protocol, in order not to destroy prematurely the Gentile institutions, we have laid our efficient hands upon them and rasped the springs of their mechanism. They were formerly in strict and just order, but we have replaced them with a liberal, disorganized, and arbitrary administration. We have tampered with jurisprudence, the franchise, the press, freedom of the person, and most important of all, education and culture, the cornerstone of free existence. We have misled, stupefied, and demoralized the youth of the Gentiles by means of education in principles and theories that are patently false to us, but which we have inspired. This is what We call the deliberate dumbing down of America is all about. It's the ninth protocol. And above existing laws without actual change, but by distorting them through contradictory interpretations, we have created something stupendous in the way of results. And we shall soon begin to establish huge monopolies, colossal reservoirs of wealth, upon which even the big Gentile properties will be dependent to such an extent that they will all fall together with the government credit on the day following the political catastrophe. The economists here present must carefully weigh the significance of this combination, and we must develop by every means the importance of our supergovernment, representing that government as the protector and the benefactor of all who voluntarily submit to us. The aristocracy of the Gentiles as a political force has passed away, and we need not take them into consideration. But as owners of the land, they are harmful to us in that they are independent in their sources of livelihood, and therefore at all costs we must deprive them of their land. The best means to attain this is to increase the taxes and the mortgage indebtedness. These measures will keep land ownership in a state of unconditional subordination. Unable to satisfy their needs by small inheritances, the aristocrats among the Gentiles will burn themselves out rapidly. And at the same time, it is necessary to encourage trade and industry vigorously, and especially speculation, the function of which is to act as a counterpoise to industry. Without speculation, industry will cause private capital to increase and tend to improve the condition of agriculture by freeing the land from indebtedness for loans by the land banks. So it's necessary for industry to deplete the land both of laborers and capital, and through speculations transfer all of the money of the world into our hands, thereby throwing the Gentiles into the ranks of the proletariat. The Gentiles will then bow before us to obtain the right to existence. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Well, Charles Lyell, one of the pillars of modern geology, published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s, and it's Lyell's concepts that are so widely accepted that today most people who believe in Lyell's principles don't even know who it was that originated those principles. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins has been devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely, and that way catastrophes like Noah's flood are strictly ruled out. This process, of course, is called science. Well, listen to this. Niagara Falls, this famous waterfall, is a magnificent example of a geologic clock that reveals a very young Earth, because the rim of the falls is wearing back at a known rate every year, and geologists recognize that it has taken about 5,000 years to erode from its original precipice. Now, what did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? Hey, that was about 65 million years ago, remember? Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the math on this kind of pseudoscientific lie, and it's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary fraud, spin, and propaganda that masquerades under the guise of science. And this is one of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School conducted twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. For more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package, would you? It's free of charge. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining, and the best of all, it doesn't cost anything. And you can call right now to order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Click on the email. Send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. We're reviewing a book called Journalistic Fraud by Bob Cohn. You can get a copy of it. The copy is WNDbooks.com. Once you go to that website, it's WNDbooks.com or Barnes & Noble, $27.95, a 1 in 20 read. I highly recommend it. Now that we have analyzed Cohn's book, I wanted to take you through the protocols of the learned elders first, and then we'll take a look at a third party interest in all of this deception. And let's see if you and I can make heads and tails of it and find out, well, what are they trying to do to us and why, and what should you and I do about it if we don't want to go along with it? The sixth protocol adds a little bit to it. Listen to this. It says, we will force up wages, which, however, will be of no benefit to workers, for we at the same time will cause a rise in the prices of prime necessities, pretending that this is due to a decline of agriculture and of cattle raising, and will also artfully and deeply undermine the sources of production by instilling in the workmen ideas of anarchy and encourage them in the use of alcohol, at the same time taking measures to drive all of the intellectual forces of the Gentiles from the land. I want you to notice that all of these protocols aren't events that are going to take place at some time in the future. These are events that have already taken place in the past. We're already living in all of the protocols of the learned elders. Formulated in 1884, they have now been implemented and put into operation. No one has told us that we've been conquered. Why would you want to tell a slave that he's been conquered and that he's now a slave? That's the problem that the Arabs are undergoing right now. You see, they can see they've been conquered by Western economic interests. That's why they're fighting to free themselves from it. You see, the best thing you can do is to tell a slave that he's free. That way, he never tries to improve his condition. He already believes that he's living at the highest level that he can live at. The 10th protocol goes on to tell us to wear everyone out by dissensions, animosities, feuds, famine, inoculation of diseases, and want, until the Gentiles see no other way of escape except as an appeal to our money and power. That's the United Nations coming up. And then finally, Louis D. Brandeis. He was a justice of our U.S. Supreme Court. Let us all recognize, Brandeis said, that we Jews are a distinct nationality of which every Jew, whatever his country, whatever his station, or whatever his shade of belief, is necessarily a member. Louis D. Brandeis, Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, many of you people out there are religious. 65% of the people in America are religious. They go to church every Sunday. That's a phenomenal statistic, people going to church every Sunday. I'm not sure they do that in Russia or China, but they do it here in the United States. And these people believe in God, or a God, or one of the gods. They believe in something, somebody, somewhere, somehow. I'm not sure which God that these people subscribe to, but here in the Bible, you know, the Christians subscribe to this concept of the Bible. In fact, I've got one here. It's called the Holy Bible. Christians don't follow the principles, practices, or laws of the Bible. They carry it with them from time to time. Now, you'll find it in the top drawer of your motel room, placed there by the Gideons. Or you'll find people like Bill Clinton coming out of church carrying a Bible. John F. Kennedy kept a Bible on his desk in the Oval Office. Preachers will oftentimes carry a Bible, or they'll sometimes even make short quotations and citations from it. But nobody believes it. Everybody believes it's a lie, and no one practices the laws contained therein, which leads me to marvel, because I think we would probably get more use out of the Encyclopedia Britannica or the Reader's Digest than we do out of the Bible. But in this topic, in this question of media deception, what's in it? Well, what's in it is revealed in the protocols. World power. We want to take over the world. Why? Where did this idea that we want to take over the world come from? Why do the Jews want to take over the world? Why do the Republicans or the Democrats want to rule from Washington? Why do we have all of this political turmoil, this grasping for power? Well, it's ingrained in human nature, and it was designed that way by your Creator. It didn't evolve by accident. And there's a third party who's involved in this process. A third party in the process. And this guy, the third party in the process, we commonly call God. Some people call him Yahweh, Jehovah. They call him just about any and everything you can imagine. Some of them aren't even fit to print. But people believe in God. People don't believe in God. People believe in evolution. People are religious, and people are not religious. But in this book that everyone claims to subscribe to, there are two key chapters, Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, which spell out this third-party interest in this control of the world, this New York Times deception. There's a guy here who calls himself I Am, God. You know, we refer to him. Let's take a look here. While we've got a little time, I'll introduce you to Leviticus 26 first, and then we'll take a look at Deuteronomy 28. You can find this yourself if you've got a Gideon Bible there in your hotel room, or if you've got a Bible sitting on the doily or maybe tucked away in your den somewhere. Go dig it out. Leviticus is the third book of the Bible, written by Moses about 3,000 years ago. 3,000. It says, "You shall make you no idols nor graven image, neither rear you up a standing image, and neither shall you set up any image of stone in your land to bow down to it, because I'm the Eternal, your God." Very revealing. In the United States, we have 51 of these stone images or idols. We call them state houses or state capitals. We have one standing graven image called the Statue of Liberty, sitting in New York Harbor. In ancient times, a guy by the name of Nebuchadnezzar reared up one of these Statues of Liberty, and he required Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to bow down and worship it when they heard the music, the national anthem, and they refused, and he threw them into the fiery furnace. Now, the first commandment prohibits you from idolatry. It tells you, you shall have no other gods before me. Now, of course, the Creator, the guy that wrote this book here, he had his head up the wrong end here, and he didn't know what he was talking about, and so we fixed that. And we created our own government, the United States of America, and we got a headquarters in Washington, D.C., and then we got 50 lesser kingdoms called state governments. And all of these sovereign governments issue laws, and we follow those laws. We worship those gods. We do not worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, nor do we practice the laws of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, or the God of Abraham. We practice our own laws. We practice the law of Hillary Clinton and Ted Kennedy and George Bush. Those are our lawmakers. Those are our gods, and those are the people that we worship. Those are our princes in America. It's called idolatry. Verse 2, and this God says, "You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary, because I am the Eternal. I am your sovereign." Well, you know, here's another one of these dead wrong ideas that this God came up with. We have our own Sabbaths. Sabbaths like Christmas, Easter, New Year's, the 4th of July, President's Day. We're not going to practice the Passover, the days of unleavened bread, the Feast of Weeks, and the Feast of Tabernacles. And I don't know where this God gets off telling us that we ought to obey his laws and his statutes and his judgments. We're smarter than he is, and we're going to practice our own, and we do. But he went on in verse 3, he says, now if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I'll give you rain in due season. And the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruits. And your threshing shall reach unto the vintage, and the vintage shall reach unto the sowing time, and you shall eat your bread to the full, and dwell in your land safely. He says, I'll give you peace in the land, and you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I'll rid evil beasts out of the land, and neither shall the sword go through your land. You'll have no wars. I'll rid the evil beasts out of your land like mountain lions. And I'll make it rain in due season. Now, you know, we don't need your rain in due season, God, because we've got crop insurance. And the land will yield her increase. Well, listen, we've been fertilizing the land, and we've been getting the increase without you for over 100 years. So why do we care about you and your promises? And your threshing shall reach to the vintage, and the vintage shall reach to the sowing time. Hey, listen, God, don't you know that we have 747s that can fly in fruits and vegetables from all over the world to feed us here in the United States? We don't need this crap from you to start with. We've got GATT and NAFTA. We can get tomatoes out of Hermosillo, Mexico. We can get berries from Guatemala and grapes from Chile. We're a member of the world's economy. We've got the United Nations now. We have the World Bank. We have the International Monetary Fund. Furthermore, we've got a printing press that prints all the credit that we need to buy all that we want from slave laborers like the Chinese, the Japanese, and everybody else in the world. So why do we need these benefits from you? We're doing quite nicely of and by ourselves. Thank you. In verse 7, this God says, you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. 5 of you shall chase 100. 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall before you by the sword. I remember a story about Andrew Jackson. Old Andrew Jackson, he went down with 989 guys and routed 10,000 British troops. That prophecy came to pass right there. 5 of you shall put 100 to flight, or 10 of you shall put 100 to flight. You know, we used to have a time in America when these prophecies meant something to our forefathers, to the founders of our republic. They were religious people. They believed in, they practiced this, and they actually reap these benefits. But today, we don't need it. We've got Apache helicopters and nuclear weapons. We've got technology, and we trust in our army. We trust in our military forces. We trust in ourselves. We don't need any gods to trust in. Now, do we? You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments, anyway? Well, it's pretty obvious that something is wrong and very wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, our public institutions, and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. They even teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national consciousness. You know, this is a radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? And are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still one school left in America, at least one, that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for observing the Ten Commandments. You know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about a book here called Journalistic Fraud, How the New York Times Distorts the News and Why It Can No Longer Be Trusted. It's written by Bob Cohn, and I'm doing an editorial review on the book. You can get a copy from WNDBooks.com. Again, that's WNDBooks.com, Nashville, Tennessee. I got mine from Barnes & Noble. It's $27.95. And it's well worth the money because it's about a 1 in 20 book. Once in a while, I read a book of 1 in 100. That's a rare book. A 1 in 20 book is one of those that, well, you're going to have to read 20 books to find one like it. It answers your questions concerning the news media, and it goes further than that. It provides you with the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. And it shows you not only that the news media is manipulating you and your mind, your thinking, but how they're doing it. Cohn made the observation. He said, you know, once you read this book, you'll never read your newspaper quite the same way again. I think he's right. But I asked the question, why? What's the New York Times got? What's their purpose? What's their plan? What is it that they're trying to accomplish? And the answer is they're part of a movement to take over the world. They want to take over the world through the United Nations. They want to replace God. They want to rule over you. They're going to reduce you to a mere number, an animal with an animal mind to work and to produce. We're looking at Leviticus 26. I said there's a third party involved here. And this third party comes on the scene and he says, now listen, boys and girls, let me tell you where the bear does it, where the rubber meets the road, so that you can understand why it is that the Times, Tom Brokaw, and the mainstream media is so hell-bent for deception. Why is it that they're trying to deceive you? What's in it for them? In verse 9, I'm in Leviticus chapter 26, he says, for I will have respect unto you, and I'll make you fruitful and multiply you and establish my covenant with you. And to that God, we can say, we don't want to be multiplied, we want to be diminished, and that's why we practice birth control. And you shall eat old store and bring forth the old because of the new. And God, we say this to you, we want dating on our packages, and we only want to eat the new, we don't want to eat the old. Besides that, we can get it fresh from Chile and bring it in on a 747. In verse 11, this third party says, I'll set my tabernacle among you, and my soul shall not abhor you. And to that we say, we don't give a rat's rectum, we don't want you around, we're going to ban you from our public schools, ban your Bible from our public schools and our national consciousness, we don't want anything to do with you. We told you that in 1 Samuel chapter 8, and you weren't paying attention. Oh yes, we're going to be religious and go to church every Sunday. We're going to carry your Bible around under our arms because we're hypocrites and we want everybody to think that we're following you and your laws. But in reality, we're not, we won't, we didn't, and we're not going to. Now, how do you like that? In verse 11, he says, I'll set my tabernacle among you. My soul will not abhor you. We don't care whether you like us or not. Get out of our face and get out of our lives. He goes on to say, I'll walk among you and I'll be your God and you'll be my people. Listen, God, we've already got our own agenda. We have Hillary Clinton, Ted Kennedy, Arlen Specter, and Dianne Feinstein to make our laws for us. Thank you very much. We don't need you. We don't want you. And we've got our own agenda. In verse 13, I'm the Eternal, your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, that you should not be their bondsman. And I've broken the bands of your yoke, and I've made you to go upright. Hey, listen, we trust in our own military, God. We've got Apache helicopters and atomic bombs. We don't need you now, irrespective of the fact that you might have freed us from Egyptian captivity thousands of years ago. That's a long time ago. It's in the past, and we don't care. Now, there's the first 13 verses of Leviticus chapter 26. I mean, that's just the way the bear does it, isn't it? I don't think I've exaggerated one iota. If anything, I've understated the case, which is what old Ben Rice told me. He said, you know, George, whenever you bring a case into court, always understate it and overprove it. I think I've understated my case. Now, this third party, this guy that we call God, he comes up in verse 14, and he says, now listen, boys and girls, if you will not hearken unto me, and if you will not do all of these commandments, and if you shall despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgment, so that you will not do all of my commandments, but that you break my covenant, I also will do this unto you. Now, this is called the penal clause to the contract. So let me describe this for you for a minute. In Exodus 19, verse 16, God was standing on top of Mount Sinai, and he's got a loud voice, and he had about 3 million people. That's your great-great-great-great-granddaddy, 84 generations back. And he said, here's what I'm going to propose. It's called a tender offer in law. Tender offer. He said, here's what I'm proposing. Now, irrespective of what you and I think of this Bible, this God, this contract, this program, your great-great-great-great-granddaddy, 84 generations ago, signed on to this program. And when he did that, in Exodus 24, verses 7 and 8, he said, all that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient. That was a historic moment. Historic moment. You might have heard about it, you know, when you went to Sunday school, you know, about the Ten Commandments and Moses. Maybe you saw Cecil B. DeMille's movie, you know, The Ten Commandments with Carlton Heston, or maybe The Exodus, or one of these big old-timey movie blockbusters of the 1950s. Maybe you heard a little something about this. Well, maybe you're a Vietnamese boatman who escaped Vietnam, or maybe you're a black African living in Alabama or Mississippi or New York or someplace. Maybe you're a Puerto Rican, you know, and you're living up in New York City. Well, gather around, boys and girls, because this contract affects you. It's called an adhesion contract. You didn't know anything about it. You never signed on to it. You never had it read to you. You have never even known that it existed. So that's why I thought I'd share it with you when I saw this book called Journalistic Fraud, How the New York Times Distorts the News and Why It Can No Longer Be Trusted, by Bob Cohn. I took a look at it and I said, ah, the New York Times. Oh, uh-huh. And why is it that the mainstream media is deceiving us? Because there's a third party that's involved here. There's a contest going on for control of the world. There's a contest going on for your allegiance. And 84 generations ago, those of you who were Israelites, your granddaddy made a covenant, made a contract out in the middle of the desert, out in Saudi Arabia, they call it today. It wasn't in the Sinai Peninsula. It was over in Saudi Arabia, across the Gulf of Aqaba, not the Red Sea, but then that's another story for another day. But the contract terms were, you obey me, keep my commandments, and I'm going to give you these benefits. There's 33 articulable benefits here. And your great-granddaddy said, all that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient. We're going to do it. And the benefits inure to the heirs and the assigns forever. That's an important legal point. They inure to the heirs and assigns forever. And forever is not up yet. There's a second factor that comes into play. Those of you who have obtained your citizenship here in the United States, all of you Mexicans flooding across the border, wanting to get into the promised land, wanting to get in on the good life. Well, you're signing on to this contract when you do that, whether you knew that or not, whether you understood it's not really relevant for the purposes of this contract, because when you came here, whether you're a boat person from Vietnam or whether you're a Mexican swimming across the Rio Grande River, when you get over here, you come under the terms and conditions of this contract. And this contract over here is about to be fulfilled. And this contract has a penal clause in it. Now, I told you what the contract was, what the agreement was. And we said, kiss off, God, we ain't doing it. Well, we're going to take a break here, and we'll be back tomorrow night on the last program, and I'm going to read to you the terms and conditions of the penal clause to the contract. You know, the other side of the story, as old Paul Harvey would say. Let me tell you the rest of the story. When I do that, I think it's going to be sobering. All right, we're about out of time. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week on Truth Radio and Truth Radio Network and worldwide on the Internet. Here's tonight's wise old saying. How do you know if a lawyer is lying? You know he's lying when he moves his lips. If you'd like more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. Remember that the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week right here on Truth Radio Network worldwide. Well, there's the signal. It says our time is up. We'll have to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night for the conclusion. God willing, same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.